and put my speaker phone on and hang the phone up, okay?
Okay.
We have just had a good class. We watched one of your presentations here at LSU and then watched, I don't know, a good 40 minutes of the 1986 Academy session with Wanda and Mary and Ron and Chuck and you. And I apologize for being late in calling
no problem.
You. Okay, well, we've got about 15 minutes. If you're ready, I think we ought to let her rip.
I can go. I go longer than 15 minutes if you'd like, but that's probably when the class gets out.
That's when the class gets out. But everyone is here. We have given everyone one of the relays that you were kind enough to leave with me, and so it's been a good day.
Good.
First question.
Right.
Please.
Hi, I'm Barbara Minsky.
Hi, Barbara.
I have really two questions, one a factual one and one an opinion one. The factual one is, were you the first person to think of interviewing the people at Hawthorne other than the Western Electric film that came out?
There was another fellow who was highly regarded in the field, and his name is Jeff Sonnenfeld.
Okay.
Jeff was a professor at Harvard, and then he left there and went down to Emory in Atlanta. And he got to them about 6 months before I did. And he and I have exchanged material. I don't think Jeff got as many of them as I did, but Ron and I were the second to be real factual about it.
Okay. My other question is, the Hawthorne studies seem to, you know, come up every few years, people questioning it and, you know, people writing papers about, you know, what the current theory is about what really happened. Why do you think this series of experiments generated so much fervor and thought? I mean, people are not, you know, just, hey, it happened. People get really violent about it.
I tell you what I think. Prior to 1940, well, prior to that study, management was very authoritarian. You know, you do what I tell you to do. And that was somewhat of a change when they put the young ladies in a room by themselves, and so they didn't have that dictatorial management style. The material sort of was dormant until after World War II. The Bell System picked it up and said, you have to treat people decently to get them to respond to you. So I remember those training courses, and it was called the Human Relations Approach to Management, because they found out that people didn't like their supervisors. And so that change went throughout the Bell System, which had 1 million members at that time. And so I think that's the biggest thing that came out of it, was if you treat people decently, they'll respond to you.
Students asked in the class today, why was it Western Electric that was able to put this kind of backing, the resources that were required into the relay assembly room and the mica splitting? I mean, why Western Electric? Why was it not some other company? There's a lot of money involved in this.
A lot of money, but let me just tell you that AT&T has always, since it was a monopoly, up until recently, has always had a lot of money to do that type of thing, and they seem to be inclined to do it. Why did they pick Western Electric? I think they picked Western Electric because a number of their managers there at the division level and above had contacts back with MIT. I think that was it. I think that's where the relationship was. The original Illumination Committee came basically out of MIT. There were a number of MIT graduates at Western Electric in Cicero, and I think that was the connection.
Good answer.
Sir, my name is Renee Fontenot.
Hi, Renee.
The question that comes to my mind, we've read a little about sort of the union's response in that to the Hawthorne studies, but what were, or is there any documentation of what other companies' response might have been when they found out what about these studies and that. I could see where it could, I mean, in terms of today's language, be a competitive advantage potential. What were other companies saying about it?
Renee, I have to tell you that I don't have any information in that area. I really don't. I know that they tried that experiment. It wasn't the first experiment out at Hawthorne. They tried it in Philadelphia, I think, and they tried it, I think Taylor tried it at a ball bearing factory, bringing in the question of fatigue and nutrition. But other than that, you've got me out on thin ice.
Okay. An honest answer is better than none.
Good morning. My name's Barbara Way.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. My question is, you know, you had a unique opportunity to be able to visit personally with the participants or essentially the subjects of a massive study to get their perspective on it. Do you think that researchers today miss out on an important aspect of their research results by relying so heavily on statistical analysis?
Let me start off and say to you that I was extremely fortunate when my good friend, and I miss him, Greenwood, said to me, "What do you know about the Hawthorne studies?" And I told him the lights went up and down, and that was the end of our conversation. I knew I was in trouble. So I was able to go to Ellinghouse, who was a friend of mine who was president of AT&T, and through him and his good office, Ron and I were able to get out there and sit and talk with those people. I would much rather sit and chat with people one-on-one than go in and look at secondary source material. We got a good feel for what went on in that room, which I don't think we would have got in research material. Now, I may not have answered your question. Come back and state your question again to me.
Okay. Do you think that researchers today miss out on an important aspect of their research?
Yes, I do. And I tell you, in the field of management history, you've got to strike while the iron is hot, because a lot of these people that you can go to are up in age. I need to talk with a 92-year-old gentleman out in New Harmony who is the great-great-grandson of Robert Owen of the Larnach fame in Scotland. And I put it off, and I'm a little bit, well, anxious about that, because at 92 you've got to get to them very quickly. That's one of the downsides of talking with people and getting firsthand information. The other is that you learn all sorts of things that went on, and stuff that is written down as the gospel truth isn't that at all. And I just enjoy the one-on-one research approach. I just think it's a great avenue to go down.
Okay, another question.
Good morning, I'm Anita Heck.
Hi.
I was wondering, during your encounters with the participants of the Hawthorne studies, is there one story or experience that was related to you that stands out?
The one that stands out, and you asked me that question, is I used to call Teresa Lehman, who was the blonde, or operator number three, who started when she was 14, before I lectured at American or George Mason, and I'd say to her, "Teresa, I'm going over and talk to a group of students tomorrow. What do you want me to tell them?" And every time she would say, "Tell them about the incident when I got the wire in my finger." And she got a wire in her finger, and they just put a little piece of Band-Aid over it. And Platinka, the authoritarian, came into the room and saw that, and he was upset because he had lost his authority, and he said to her, "Why didn't you go to the medical department? Don't you know you were supposed to go to the medical department?" And her remembrance of that was such that she said, "I hated him. I didn't even go to his funeral." And so that's the one thing that comes up, not a very significant one, but it tells me something about the relationship between the workers and supervision in those days. Mm-hmm. And that's the one incident among all the others that comes back when you ask me that question.
And one other quick question.
Sure.
What grade did Ron give you in that class?
I think he gave me an A because I took him up to the Western Electric, and he absolutely had, he's in heaven now, but he was in heaven then, because sitting talking with the original participants is something that he thought would never occur.
Uh-huh. Our next question.
Now, I tell you who told him to give me a good grade was the little lady, what was her name, number one?
Mary Valingo?
What was her name? Ron went over to get a brick from her.
Valingo, wasn't it?
Valingo, yeah. Okay. And Valingo wouldn't let Ron come in, and I said, I don't blame her. But yeah, she handed him the brick. He said to her, I'd like to come in and talk to you because I will give Bolton his grade. And she said from inside with a little voice, well, give him a good grade. And I think Ron gave me an A.
Sir, it's Mark Brown. How are you today?
Fine, Mark.
A question kind of coming back to modern times. I like to follow what's going on in the business world in general, and with the changes with Robert Allen and AT&T now, I think back about this and I wonder, do you think AT&T carries sort of artifacts from Hawthorne? And if we see a lot of real big changes there when AT&T splits into these varying divisions, do you think the way they behave from an HR perspective is still going to be influenced by what happened at Hawthorne so many years ago?
No, I know Allen. He was president of CMP Telephone in Washington, so I knew him well enough to speak to him and chat with him in the elevator, so we'll just take and put that aside. That period of time of human relations or decent treatment of people and a strong loyalty is gone. It is gone. It started going in 1984-85 with the breakup of the Bell system. And I doubt seriously if we'll ever get back to the relationships that occurred between workers and supervisors throughout the end of the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. I don't think we'll ever see that again. I don't know whether that answers your question or not. But the workers are very suspicious of management, and there are a lot of Bell people around here rewiring our college, and they stop in and talk to me because I started in that field, and there just is no trust anymore, and so that period I think is gone.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tammy Gerald. Thank you very much for the relay.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Yeah, as I say to a number of people, we have a limited number. And as you look at your relay, you know, you can say that either Mary or Teresa or Irene probably made that relay. So put it up on your dresser or someplace, and when you look at it, say, you know, I really need to treat people decently. That's what I tell my
I'll keep that in mind. As a follow-up to Mark's question, back in the earlier days when Western Electric first realized and documented that, yes, treating people like people really made a difference, can you tell us a little bit about how that influenced the management training programs or what they told their supervisors and what kinds of behaviors would be accepted or not accepted
sure.
from their supervisors?
It might seem very simple, but when I became a manager and went through those human relations courses, it basically was pay attention to your people and tell them when they do a good job and show that, you know, not a superficial interest in them, but I used to send the people in my department a birthday card when their birthday came up, and had a file, and I would write to them. Or I'd go down to the central office, put a headset on, and just go along and plug into the board and talk to Mary or Sue. They were all women those days. We had no men at switchboards. If someone was getting married, I'd try to go to the wedding. I always went to funerals. not because I had to go, but because it was a very difficult time in individuals' lives. So I tried to be part of those periods in their life that was a happy period and was a sad period, to show them that, you know, we were very interested in them. And then on other occasions when they did well in an office, in a competition or results or something like that, I'd send them a couple of dozen donuts in the morning, or I'd send them 4 or 5 dozen roses and we'd put in the office, just to let them know that I was happy with what they had done for me. Mm-hmm. That help?
We're almost out of time. I think, you know.
Got one last question.
Well, there are a lot of things that come to mind, and I'll ask if there is a last question. I was going to ask if you might have a question.
No, I really don't. Uh-huh. You caught me off guard. I don't have a question.
Just a typical faculty member. You want to ask the questions, you don't have to know the answers, huh?
No.
This obviously was a memorable experience in your life.
It changed my life, Art. It changed my life.
As you look back upon Hawthorne and all the people that, I guess actually going back to school probably was the beginning of it, and meeting Ron and then Chuck and then within the academy.
That's correct. And meeting office, you.
Well, for better or worse.
You and Dan Wren, and it just changed. And the period of time, if you were to ask me, can you pinpoint it? Yes, I can. When we got up from that four-hour meeting, Ron and myself and Chipman and the two ladies, and I looked up at the clock, and it was 12, and we were to go down and have lunch with them. As I looked up, I said to myself, this has changed your life. And I'll always go back to that period in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't thank you enough for being patient for our phone call and spending this time with us. And, of course, we each thank you for the relays. You're just a wonderful person and a wonderful friend. So thank you very much, and please give Pete my very best.
I will. I'm delighted. And if any of your students correspond with me or call me, or I'd be more than happy to share what information I have.
You're excellent. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.